Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Check out the Scores starting lineup. Molly and Hall, mornings 5 to 9. The Bernstein and Rahimi Show, middays 9 to noon. Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2. The Parkins and Spiegel Show, afternoons 2 to 6. Followed by Joe O, 6 to 10. And Score overnights with Les Grobstein till 5 a.m. Only on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We are WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. A radio.com sports station.
This hour is brought to you by Cards for Kids. Call 1-877-CARDS with a K, the numeral 4, KIDS.
Yeah, Kobe, I was just wondering, you were out there on the court shooting again after this game, even though you had a good shooting night. What was kind of the mindset behind doing that? And then also, just, do you feel like you're getting more consistent?
I mean, I was like 0-4 from the 3-point line, so I wouldn't say I had a good, I mean, from the field, probably, yeah, maybe, but... Nah, not from the three-point line. I feel like my teammates trust me, especially in the second half. You know, they trusted me to make some shots, and I came up short. Wendell passed me, you know, one in the corner. I felt like I should have made. He trusted me, and it didn't fall through. But I don't. How did y'all even get that? Wait, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm up in the 200.
Oh yeah, yeah. Nah, I mean. It's the norm, bro, especially CK's my guy, so he wants to be in the gym just as much as I do. So we do it all the time. We go shoot all the time. It just so happened that we was able to shoot after the game tonight because the Blackhawks doesn't have a game anytime soon, so they left the court down. So I was able to go shoot, which is something that I don't normally do because of the court, so I usually shoot over at the practice facility. But anytime I get a chance to get reps in here, I do it just because of the availability because of Blackhawks and the Bulls.
It's Bernstein and Rahimi, middays 9 a.m. to noon on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score and the radio.com app.
See, reporters see stuff. They know stuff.
Things that you don't think that basketball players worry about, whether or not the Blackhawks have a game later. I love it.
The fact that you're out there getting in practice after an overtime game, you know, that's cool stuff. Cody Westerlund was the reporter that you heard talking to Kobe. It was Cody. And Cody Westerlund's on Twitter at Cody Westerlund, and he's on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park on North Avenue or at apford.com. Hello, Cody, what's up?
Hey, how are you guys doing today? I followed the Blackhawks schedule closely, too, as it relates to the Bulls, because it's really loud to ride at the United Center when they're putting the hockey rink up after the game. So, like Kobe, Cody also follows that schedule.
I just love that whole exchange because it's a valid question. If you're shooting better, why are you trying to get more work in after a grueling NBA game? And I laughed because you could tell as he's answering the question, he had no idea that you could see it. It's stuff like that we just don't get that often, but you were able to have a little bit of a discussion there, and he revealed some stuff to us, even in his answer back to you, Cody.
Yeah, and he's been a guy that's done that a lot. I know he goes and shoots sometimes at the Advocate Center with his brother Will late at night as well. They were talking about that in his rookie year when he also had some ups and downs, obviously. Kobe White, we saw some spectacular scoring binges from him, and then he'd go in a rut for a few games, and he's a guy that's in the gym twice a day quite often, and a lot of times that involves shooting late at night, you know. Youngsters like him, I believe he's 20 years old, going on 21 years old here. But he will be a guy who who is in the gym a lot, and he's a guy the Bulls really need, too, because we saw last night, and my question aside about the 0-of-6 three-point shooting, that wasn't the greatest question, obviously, caught up in the mayhem of the postgame, but he also had 7 turnovers, and that's one of the reasons the Timberwolves were hanging around with the Bulls, and it took them till overtime. So he needs to cut down on those, obviously, in some situations. Turnovers he hadn't been too bad with lately going off the ball, because the Bulls have put the ball in Zach LaVine's hands more to initiate the offense and freed up Kobe a little bit to be more comfortable off the ball. But that's a storyline we've been following all season, and it's a storyline that if he plays a little bit better, Zach plays a little bit better, and the Bulls play more defense, they can put the Timberwolves away in regulation instead of overtime.
Just the slightest bit of rim protection would have been nice last night. And I know that Luke Kornet is trying. He's just not very good, and he's not much of an impediment to anything. If you missed it earlier, the corollary of the Doug McDermott nunchucks rule, I'm letting Luke Kornet have a machete. I think just whatever you can do out there, you get the machete, and if you want to hack off limbs, you're free to do so. The question that raised for me, Cody, was how deep in the doghouse is Daniel Gafford? Like, how benched is he to not be able to come out there and give them the one thing they needed last night?
Yeah, there's no doubt, Dan. That's the big takeaway from that. And he's really in the doghouse, and I don't think it's for anything personally that he's done. I think it's obviously for his on-court play. And Billy Donovan has played matchups so much, but he really hasn't used Daniel Gafford in anything other than garbage time here for the last probably week or two. Going on back, I think, to the game against the Pelicans at the United Center a few weeks ago, it's been Kornet more. So Gafford, what he does, like you've talked about this, Dan, like he has rim protection. The problem is he's probably too liberal in trying to protect the rim, in the sense that he's trying to block everything sometimes, and he leaves the window open for the other team to get offensive rebounds. So I think Billy Donovan, as bad as Luke Kornet has been, for a few minutes has more faith in him to be in the right spot on the floor. It's also why they were so happy to get Wendell Carter Jr. back. It's also why Thad Young is playing big minutes for the Bulls. But Gafford has got to learn how to kind of harness his instincts of trying to chase and block everything, when he should do that and when he should stay on the floor, put his body on someone, because it's pretty glaring. He's a really good offensive rebounder, and he's a pretty darn bad defensive rebounder, which you don't see too often, but I guess it's not shocking for young guys, obviously, in that situation that they have to learn with that. But I don't know. There's probably a debate to be had there. Like, are you a good defensive rebounder? How much of that is coaching and how much of it is instincts? Because we see it around the NBA with other players, too. I mean, you look at Zion Williamson in New Orleans. Like, he's a magnificent offensive rebounder. They wish he was a better defensive rebounder and had better defensive instincts there. So it's young players go through this. There's no doubt. But it's going to take time. We've seen all the time, Billy Donovan, he's a big matchups guy. Like, we've seen this a lot. Like, sometimes Wendell Carter Jr. closes the game, sometimes he doesn't, even though he's the Bulls' starting center. Like, the only guys that you're really guaranteed to have out there in crunch time are usually Zach and Kobe, and obviously Thad Young now, lately, because he's been playing so well. All year long he's been playing well, but Lauri Markkanen's been out the last few weeks, so that opens up even more room for Thad late. So Billy Donovan is going to keep playing those matchups, and I think that's what you like to see. That's what fans like to see, just responding to the moment in the game and making changes from game to game.
Some interesting comments from Donovan before the game, too, regarding Lauri Markkanen, saying that it's going to be at least the All-Star break. What were your takeaways from what he had to say?
Yeah, my takeaway was he'll come back March 11th against the 76ers. The All-Star break, I believe, will be 6 days off, maybe 7 days off for the Bulls. I don't think they play on the last day where some teams play next Thursday night on the schedule. So that should be plenty of time. They need him back. They're playing well. But look, you need a guy back who's averaging 19 points on pretty efficient shooting. Someone who, even if you don't think Lauri Markkanen is going to be a cornerstone for your franchise, and maybe this front office does, maybe they don't, you'll want to see him play quite a bit. This is a team in the second half of the season. It's going to be really, really, really busy on the schedule. I was looking at it after the NBA released the schedules yesterday. There's maybe like 4 or 5 times that the Bulls really will even have an obvious practice situation. There'll be days in between that Billy Donovan might have light practices, but they're going to need depth. They need Lauri Markkanen back to help Thad Young's minutes go down. They need Lauri Markkanen back for his talent. And Hopefully he comes back on March 11th, because I'm going to have really big questions if he doesn't. Because, look, that's a shoulder sprain. We understand that can take a little bit to heal. But when you start out with a 2 to 4 week injury timeline, and we'll be approaching 4 weeks by the time the Bulls go into the All-Star break, like, you would think 4.5, 5 weeks he should be back at that point. Otherwise, there's bigger concerns. And, look, he hasn't played enough here in his first 4 years in the NBA. He's dealt with injury problems, and this is one he needs to come back from and start proving himself as healthy again down the stretch as the Bulls try to play better basketball and make a playoff run.
And after hearing from Brian Geltzeiler yesterday that he has to come back and be healthy so they can trade him, so that he can show other teams that he is back and has some value, and you know that plays into it too, of being able to build his value back up on the open market. And I heard Thad Young say something on that Zach LaVine Zoom call, the little prank that they pulled on him when they had all his friends and family there congratulating him. Thad Young said something to the effect of, we got two things we wanted to accomplish this year, get Zach to the All-Star game and make the playoffs. And that's the first time I've heard a player sort of put it in that way. Are they discussing this internally? Where did this stated goal start? And was this something that came from Billy Donovan? Is this something that has developed as now they've realized they're good, that they really themselves want to be a playoff team?
I think it's mainly player-led, because we have talked to Billy about that before the season started, early in the season, not maybe quite as specifically, but more generally. And he didn't, I never heard him put it that directly in those terms, but Wendell Carter Jr., you picked up on that well, Dan, with the players, and Thad mentioned that. He was as strong as any Bulls player has been all season last night after the game, saying, like, look, we expect big things. We expect to make the playoffs. That's our goal. That's why I've came into the NBA. That's my first goal, and I feel like it's an accomplishable task and goal now for the Bulls. So, yes, they're talking about it more, and that's what happens when you're solo six in the East, when it's really mashed up, really, I think, between 3-4 and basically all the way to 9-10 in the East, kind of. There's only a couple teams out in front, obviously, there with the 76ers and the Nets at this point. So the Bulls, it's an achievement that can be had, there's no doubt. And you brought up Markkanen trade possibility, Thad Young you brought up. I think this is the most interesting call now. And I think this is the big topic for the Bulls. Trade deadline, March 25th. If they hang on to Thad Young, the Bulls should make the playoffs. Like, they're good enough to make the playoffs with the way Thad Young and Zach LaVine are playing basketball and how they kind of have these veterans around them, and young guys are showing up in spurts from night to night and giving them a little bit. So if they trade Thad Young, that's when you start peeling back, I think, a little bit in the playoff race. But if you're Karnišovas and Eversley, how do you walk like up to Zach LaVine at this point, and Zach called Thad Young the MVP of the team recently, and say, you know, on March 20th, hey, Zach, I know you've taken huge steps. I know what Thad means to you. We're just going to trade him. Playoffs don't matter. Sorry, man. We got to get that first-round pick so we can maybe trade up, you know, from 10 to 6 in this draft. But hang in there, buddy. You know, we like what you're doing. Like, that's a hard sell as a front office. So I think every day the Bulls win, every day Thad Young shines, every day guys like Wendell Carter Jr. are talking about, we can get to the playoffs. I think we can get there and be competitive in first round series. And this is my words a little bit here, but just the way he's talking, like, they feel like they can play competitively with anyone in the NBA when they play well on a given night. That's going to be hard to do if they trade Thad Young. And I don't know how you approach that exactly as a front office. I think I would personally trade Thad Young if I get a first round pick, because I do think the long-term future, more on the Kobe White, Pat Williams timeline, is what's best for this Bulls organization. And if that first-round pick helps you trade up, I think that's really important. But every day they win, every day Thad Young plays well, I think that's getting harder to do. And honestly, I think it makes it a little more likely that Lauri Markkanen is the one that gets traded, because if the Bulls have decided that they really don't like him at any number near $20 million, which they didn't in previous negotiations, and if they really don't want to pay him around $16-17 million a year, you can flip him and get a little bit of value if you're going to let him go on restricted free agency anyway. And I know you could still do a sign and trade later as well and stuff, but maybe there's a little more value at this trade deadline. So there's a lot to juggle, a lot of balls up in the air, and you can choose which one. And this trade deadline is going to be really fascinating for the Bulls.
Cody, I think you just pointed out the main storyline with the Bulls is, until the trade deadline, is trying to measure what they could get for Thaddeus Young or Lauri Markkanen versus what a playoff berth does for the team. And I am very concerned about the idea of being penny wise and pound foolish here, wanting to make the playoffs for playoff sake, even though Getsy said it yesterday, it does help a young team develop. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But this is still the first year of a brand new regime, even though to us, it's not the first year of a rebuild. But to them, it is. And I don't know how you balance those expectations.
It's really difficult, and I don't know how they do either. It's a question that if AK wants to talk or Eversley wants to talk anytime soon, that will be certainly on the list of how you weigh those two things. And I still fall into the Bulls with the playoffs expanded to 10 teams, the play-in game, like that would still feel like a really big game to the Bulls, obviously, even if they're not yet one of the final eight. I still think if they traded Thad Young, they could play a month and a half well enough to be in the final 10. I don't think there's any way if they trade Thad Young that they're going to be one of the top six teams in the East, just because I think he's meant that much to the team at this point. So I still fall onto the long-term future. And again, the only player they're tied to is Patrick Williams right now. He's 19 years old, and he's the long-term future of this team at this point. So you look at everything. And I think the other thing to note is there's no superstar probably that's coming to Chicago this offseason to make them a championship contender or probably even an Eastern Conference Finals contender next season. And that would be the reason to keep Thad Young, right? Like, he's in the second to last year of his contract, so you have Thad Young under contract next year too. If you thought you were one player away in free agency from really contending for something that mattered in the 21-22 season, then you'd be more likely to keep Thad Young. But I don't think the Bulls are viewing 21-22 as a season of real big contention in any way, because at this point, who's the biggest free agent that's going to be available? I think Kawhi Leonard, after Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Giannis, Paul George all signed long-term extensions, that's a really competitive marketplace. All signs point to Kawhi staying, obviously, in Los Angeles. So the Bulls still feel like they're several years away. So that's why I think they should still prioritize gaining assets and value. And again, I know the first thing fans will say is, like, what does the number 25 pick or 24 pick do in the first round? Well, this is a front office that wants to build through the draft. So in their eyes, it's someone that can be a rotation player for 6 to 10 years for them, potentially. Or it can be the difference between having the 12 pick and trading up to the 7 pick to get someone they really want in a certain situation. So I still think this front office is going to look at the big picture. I just don't know how that will manifest itself in their decisions yet.
It's painful to hear that when Otto Porter Jr. contract comes off the books and that $28.5 million is gone, you don't have a viable place to spend it yet.
That is correct. But we saw with Garrett Temple, they signed him to a one-year, $5 million deal. He has helped the team. There will be guys out there available. There are every year. I have not looked at the second, third, and fourth tier of NBA free agency closely for this offseason. And there's a lot of player options and team options that need sorted out. So they can find guys on short-term deals. You don't have to, Layla, you don't have to sign Otto Porter to like 4 years, $105 million. You don't have to sign guys like that. You can find one-year deals. I mean,
what if you trade for that guy? How about that?
Well, the trade market, the restricted free agency market will be interesting too. I mean, I know we've talked about Lonzo Ball quite a bit, but that might be somewhere where you use your cap space to make an offer maybe a little bit more than other teams or the incumbent team is willing to go on. And that could be Lonzo. It could be someone else. The Bulls still need to get their point guard situation figured out. I think so far what we've learned the most this year is that Kobe White's best used in some sort of off-ball combo role rather than point guard. And I think we've also learned, and this is really important, Patrick Williams is going to be a power forward eventually. So when you make decisions, slot him in at power forward in the future, which begs the question, that's where Lauri Markkanen plays now too, which makes his future more complicated for the Bulls as well. So I think those are the things we've learned, and we're waiting on a lot of other things.
Lastly, real quick, we got about a minute here, Cody. Thinking about Karnišovas and Eversley and thinking about development, and maybe they don't care if they're picking 18th or if they're picking 10th because they just don't look at developing talent that way. With the Windy City Bulls not included in the G League this year, what is happening with any developmental players under contract? And what is going on with Marko Simanović in Serbia? Is he playing this year's second-round pick?
Marco's playing well over there. That's all I know. I've seen highlights. I've seen stat lines. I've heard a few things. They like him. I do not know what that means for his timeline. I do not have a clue, Dan, yet. I can work on this, though. I don't have a clue yet if that means he could be a contributor or come to the NBA anytime soon.
I'd like to know.
Devon Dotson is in the G League bubble playing. They loaned him. So that's where he's getting some run. He was being left off their travel roster a little bit because they wanted him just to get more shots up and more work, and it was hard to do on the road. So they figured they want game action for him. So that's where he's been developing in the bubble. And that's where he will continue to develop, obviously, and the Bulls will have to run their G League team back next year a little bit more.
Cool stuff. Cody, thanks, man.
Appreciate it.
Thanks,
that
Cody.
Is Cody Westerlund, our digital editor here and a Bulls reporter for Sports Radio 670 The Score. Next up, we are going to open a sealed, real pack of 1988 Topps baseball cards because Layla has it and we want to do this.
And Matt Spiegel doesn't agree with you.
On what now?
Twitter.
On what? What subject?
He says 29 minutes ago, God bless Ian Happ for speaking the player's truth about RBI to Dan Bernstein so beautifully.
Oh, we've had
seriously
this
satisfying and nearly a decade in the waiting. Speak on it, Spiegel.
We've had this discussion for years. Everybody knows where those lines are drawn. And the fact is, it's still true that Mike Trout was better in 2012, even though he didn't win the MVP. I mean, Ian Happ did a great job explaining the way people explain it. It still doesn't mean that the Triple Crown supersedes being better at baseball. That's my point.
Oh, I know what your point is, but I also know what the truth is.
That's Hawk Rahimi in her white tracksuit. Let's open some baseball cards next on The Score.
But that will not derail our baseball conversation.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Here's my note card. Well,
Tony opening card. Hey, I got a note card right here. We'll get to some more Tony La Russa a little bit later on. Wow. All right, let's do this.
This is a gift from Chris Kampka to me and now the show. I'm going to open it up and bequeath to you whatever remnants.
Before you do, this is a 1988 pack of Topps Major League Baseball cards.
Mm-hmm.
Where were you? What were you doing in 1988?
I was six. And I was in elementary school. That's about it.
Okay, it was my first summer, my very first job in professional sports. It was that summer after my freshman year of college when I was doing the, for $15 a game, I was the stadium announcer at Warner Park for the Madison Muskies, the Class A affiliate of the Oakland Athletics. Scott Brosius, Ozzie Canseco, and others. It was the year after, I believe, Ron Coomer played for them. And it was some of the most fun I've ever had in my life. Just with the teams all came through and being able to be around former big leaguers who were managing and hang out in dugouts. One of my jobs was to get first-round pick Martise Robinson caramel corn in the locker room before every game. Because I think that was his only meal of the day.
Caramel corn.
Yeah, Scott Brosius was a shortstop. Bad. Oh, was he? He could not field. He like every I think he had 37 errors in like 120 games or something like that. Couldn't field. But Ozzie Canseco is Jose's twin brother, who is considerably smaller, even though interestingly they had the identical genetics. I don't know how that could possibly have happened, but there we were, and I stayed at a hotel there. What was it called? So, and it was right next to the Denny's. I ate almost every meal at Denny's. Life was so good.
But you didn't get waffles at the Denny's, did you?
No, I got chicken strips and I dipped them in ranch dressing.
Oh, no.
I love Denny's ranch dressing. It's really watery. I don't know what. That's my favorite ranch dressing to this day. All right, so I want to see if I can have a thought about any one of these players in here.
Yes. All right.
Because you won't remember. You were six.
Yeah. I was born in the middle of the year.
You probably know them after the fact from, like, now that they've been coaches and now they're potbelly guys who you probably work with in San Diego or Houston or Philly.
The gum is in four pieces, but it is pink.
Give me the gum.
And it's somewhat intact. I think there might be mold.
This mold will be dead.
What is wrong with you? It says team up against drugs on here.
This is disgusting, by the way. Can I spit it out?
Yes, of course.
Oh my God, it's gross.
If I didn't kill Dan Bernstein, okay? I just want you guys to know that right now. I hope somebody's watching this on Twitch because this is pretty funny.
Oh my God, that's vile.
Of course it is.
It tastes vaguely like gum. It's a texture thing.
Does it still smell like gum? No. I don't know what possesses you to do this. And there's a gum stain on this card.
That was my roommate, Steve Gumstain.
This isn't even a player card. This is the Orioles team leaders card.
Oh, Orioles team leaders in 88.
This is an 87 Orioles team leaders card. Cal Ripken and Eddie Murray, yeah, of course.
Right, Ripken and Murray. Okay.
All right. So there's that.
Okay.
The gum stain. I really hope you're okay.
I'm fine.
Yeah. Next, Ted Power of the Cincinnati
Ted
Reds.
Ted Power. It's all right. He's kind of a guy. I think in 1 year we got a bunch of saves. Relief pitcher.
Spent 5 seasons with the Reds, 2 before that with the Dodgers, 81-82 with the Dodgers. Ted led the Pacific Coast League with 18 wins at Albuquerque in 1981.
Congrats. I love that these are when the cards still had the one fun fact about some guy.
They did. Height 6'4". Righty. He's from Guthrie, Oklahoma. Next, a turn back the clock card.
Yeah?
Jim Rice of the Red Sox, 1978.
That's Spiegel's guy. Somewhere he just sky pointed, even though he's not dead.
No, in fact, he was listening to part of our show earlier. 10 years ago, 1978, a home run from an unlikely source provided Yankees with victory. Yankees, not the Yankees.
Bucky Dent?
In one of the most light-hitting Bucky Dent, not known for his power, shocked the Red Sox by lofting a 3-run home run into the net above Fenway Park's Green Monster.
Yeah, with Willie Randolph's bat.
I love it. In the seventh,
on Rosh Hashanah.
In the seventh inning to erase a 2-0 Boston lead. In game won by the Bronx Bombers 5-4, giving New Yorkers the championship of the AL East.
Yep.
Regular season highlights were achieved by the Reds. Pete Rose, whose 1978 accomplishments included surpassing the 3,000 hit mark and tying the all-time National League record by hitting safely in 44 consecutive games. There's more, but I think we don't have time.
We got names.
Oh, this is a good one. Kevin Elster. When he was with the Mets.
Kevin Elster. You got to say it like that because all the fans would talk about Kevin Elster.
Kevin signed as a second round draft selection with the Mets on May 21st, 1984. Next up, another team leaders card. The Topps 88 pack was big on the team leaders.
Yeah, it was a bad pack so far.
Okay. So this ties to my most valuable card that I don't have anymore, but remembered having. Brewers team leaders from 87. Want to take a guess at who some of the names are?
Yount.
Yes. Hits 198 that season. 103 RBIs. Not that you care, Dan.
Rob Deer.
Yes. Home runs with 28. And one more name, clearly.
One more name.
The one that I value out of my now defunct baseball card collection.
Paul Molitor.
Correct. 114 runs, 198 hits. And one more, so 45 stolen bases. God, I can't even read that without freaking out now. 45 stolen bases.
Wow.
Like, that's 11 billion in modern times.
It is. It is with the new factor.
And the twin brother of your former colleague, if it isn't one of the Bash
brothers.
You got
a Jose Canseco. There you go.
Jose Canseco looks like he's photoshopped here, but I think that's just how he looked back then.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a good one.
Jose
was named to Southern League's All-Star team and was selected as Loop's MVP at Huntsville, Alabama in 1985.
He was a Huntsville star, indeed, yes.
Love it. All right, next up, Guy Hoffman.
Who the hell is he? Guy Hoffman.
He's Guy.
It's Guy.
Who the hell is he?
He earned his first Major League win on October 2nd, 1980, spun his first major league complete game on June 1st, 1986, spent the 79, 80, and 83 seasons with the White Sox. That 83 season.
Guy Hoffman? I don't even remember him at all.
He had a cool 750 ERA. Played in 11 games that season. Then he was with the Cubs the next year. A much more respectable showing, 32 games, 84 innings, 386, and then with the Reds in 87.
He's not even the first Guy Hoffman that pops up on Google.
This is some sort of form.
Robotics
when,
guy.
Win a trip for four to the 1989 spring training camp.
Send it in. Fill it out. We're going. Scorehouse. 89 Score spring house. Training. Scorehouse at the 89 spring training.
Our Twitch stream is blowing up over 1988 baseball cards.
It should.
I love it. All right. Ed Romero of the Red Sox is the next card in this pile.
Yeah, I got nothing.
He spent most of his seasons with the Milwaukee Brewers, according to this card, 367 of them. Then he had 2 years with the Red Sox. Ed led Midwest League shortstops.
Oh my, got a career OPS plus of 67. Ed Romero, bad. Career WAR minus 5.2.
Oh, yeah. Well, he had 647 total chances.
12 years. He played 12 years to accrue a minus 5 WAR. God, baseball used to suck.
I can't get over the 45 stolen bases. Okay, next one. Mike Bielecki of the Pirates.
Mike Bielecki, yes.
Yeah, I didn't know if I was saying that right or not. Sorry, guys.
He's okay. Pretty good. 6'3",
200, righty. Born in Baltimore, Maryland in 1959.
He was a big part of the Cubs rotation when they won the division in 89.
At this point, wasn't yet because this is the 88 card. And the stat here is that Mike signed as a number one special draft selection with the Pittsburgh Pirates by scout Murray Cook. They named the scouts on here, which I think is kind of cool.
He was 18-7 with a 3.14 ERA for the 89 Cubs.
Yes!
What'd you get? You got a winner?
I really am Hawk today. Oh, holy moly.
Yes!
Yes!
Hell yeah!
Actually, there is a card I have that is, it's really appropriate.
Who'd you get? Who is it?
Bo Jackson.
Oh, hot damn. Yeah.
In this Royals uniform.
Look at that. That
Let's
might
go.
Be a little value there. That's a cool looking card.
Bo Jackson. Oh, this is, yeah, because 86 is Memphis, his, 86
is
Royals.
That his rookie? Is that a Bo Jackson rookie?
No, because it's, I don't think so.
I wouldn't touch corners there. I'd be, you know.
How does that work? Bo is named, here's a stat. Bo is named, I don't think it's a rookie card.
Okay.
Because it's 88, and he had 116 games in 87.
So yeah, no. So no.
Bo is named Southern League Player of the Week at Memphis. I think he's going to do more than this baseball card. July 15th through 21st, 1986, 11 for 26 performance, including a double, three triples, and two home runs. I need a little sleeve for this guy.
That's pretty cool. Good looking card.
Here it is.
How many we got left?
We have like 5 left.
All right. You want to do those 5 instead of doing the midday midway?
Whichever you guys prefer. Let's produce on the fly.
I say we save it, and I say we make the midday midway the rest of the pack.
All right, let's do it. Layla, hold me up that Bo Jackson card again so I can see it over here.
Okay, sorry.
Because I see one on eBay from 88 that's $1,000.
What?
Whoa.
But I need to see if
I
it's
quit
the right-
this show.
Take this job and shove it.
Did you already lose it?
No. But this is the card that I really want to yell at Dan about.
All right, well, don't touch the Bo Jackson card. Wait, hold it up.
It's that's the Jose.
I got to see it. I got to see it.
Guys, I'm not good at this. Oh, I set it down in my plastic pile. This guy?
That's the one.
$1,000?
I mean, it's right there. It's the same one.
Chris Kamke gave me this pack. Isn't it
Put
his?
That in plastic.
There's also the same one for $12.
Well, it's all about condition.
$12?
But she just opened the pack.
I quit this show.
$12.
Everybody who hates my voice, congratulations. I have a $12 baseball card. Peace up, A-Town down. Go find another host.
Smash cut. She's pouring Ace of Spades champagne on her head.
Pandemic Fortunes with Layla Rahimi.
All right, we're going to do more of this. This is going to be, we're going to carry this over and make it the midday midway on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
We're turning back the clock to 1988. I was my first summer working in professional baseball. Layla was 6. So
yeah,
you were finishing, is that first grade, finishing kindergarten?
So I was born in the middle of the year. So, but I was like young for my grade. I don't know. I'd have to think about it. I think it was. Yeah, I don't know. Off the
top of my head. So you're somewhere in Denton, Texas.
Yes.
and I was somewhere either in Deerfield or Hayward, Wisconsin, or Madison, Wisconsin at this point, as we're going through a brand new 1988 Topps pack that she just opened. I cannot get the gum taste out of my mouth.
Dan chewed the gum. Dan, most careful guy I know in pandemic, chewed the gum. What if there's an airborne disease in there?
It's going to be fine. It's Topps gum. It's nothing bad is going to happen. Something bad will happen to me, but not because of that.
I took a picture of the Bo card. Bo Jackson is the biggest name in this card so far. We've also gotten Jose Canseco.
Jose Canseco is a bigger name, but that might be the more valuable card.
Yeah. Bo Jackson just hits me in the feels. I'm being very soxy in this. I'm Hawk Rahimi today, as everybody's pointing out on Twitch. I'm okay with that, guys. I'm okay with that. Our next up in the card. Should we get some music or something? What should we do? You want a music bed, Jordan? What do you think?
He's got pretty good instincts for this. Let's just...
This is our Midday Midway today.
Yeah, instead of the regular Midday Midway, we're doing this.
And so we boy, can spin. Do we have some good Midday Midway stories. Oh. I guess I'll just have to wait till tomorrow.
Okay.
Next up, I believe it's Doug DeSensei.
Doug DeSensei!
Sensei.
The dangerous Doug DeSensei. I got a dangerous bat. And boy,
Boy, does he have some service time on this card. 73 through 81, he played with the Orioles. 82 through 87, the Angels. Midway through 87, playing for the Cardinals. Signed by the Cards as a free agent on 9/29/87.
He was third in MVP voting in 1982 with a slash line of 301, 369, 548. An OPS of 916 for the then California Angels. Had 30 home runs, and if you want RBIs, 97.
I love the uniform, by the way, the sanitary socks, the capri pants. Also, it's an Angels picture. And
they're
just,
not capri pants. They're baseball pants.
They're capri pants. And then on the side, it just says, now with Cardinals. That's how you update. Now we have Photoshops of the guy in the uniform before he ever actually plays for the team. But on this... Now with Cardinals.
Yeah, Hawk used to refer to him when he'd come back. Doug DeSensei, dangerous. The always dangerous Doug DeSensei.
How dare I, Hawk Rahimi, not know that. Next up, Teddy Higuera.
Teddy Higuera, Brewers left-handed stud.
Correct. Pitched for Juarez for 5 seasons, then El Paso, Vancouver. Man, this is kind of a cool little career arc. Then the Brewers for 3 years, 85, 86, 87. Wow, 2.03 ERA, led the Mexican League with 165 strikeouts, 222 innings at Juarez in 83. Tied for the lead with 27 starts and 18 complete games. No big deal.
He was second in Rookie of the Year voting in 85. He was an All-Star in 86 when he won 20 games. I believe when we were following Esteban Loaiza as a White Sox, who I think now is serving like a 35-year prison sentence for being a drug kingpin, something like that.
Details.
But right. But Esteban Loaiza was, how did Terry, he was going for the record for the most wins by a Mexican-born pitcher, which Terry distilled it down to setting the Mexican pitching record. And was it Teddy Higuera's record that he broke?
Perhaps. This is an impressive Mexican league. Like all put together.
Yeah, but even like as far as the major league record for wins by a Mexican-born pitcher, I think that's what it was. It might have been Teddy Higuera who was the one-time holder of the Mexican pitching record.
We might have a better card than Bo.
Card or player?
Tom Glavine.
Ooh, that's one of the... Is that it?
Braves.
Yeah, though that was what in the article I looked up. 88 Glavine's worth like $50.
I quit the show!
No, that's the card. Let me get
like,
the article.
Look at this. Look at this as I look at it myself and don't show anybody. I'm trying to show you guys on Twitch.
Is the card number 779?
Where would I? Yes.
That's it.
Holy moly.
That is on this list. The 10 most valuable 1988 Topps baseball cards. Seriously, you got it. It's number one.
This is the most valuable 88 card from Topps?
$335.
What?
Yeah. Don't touch it. Don't even point at it.
Don't even look at it.
Stop looking at it. What are you doing?
I curse my eyes.
Yeah, that's it. This is the number one most valuable card, number 779 in 1988. Everything's coming up, Rahimi.
Dude, I'm getting rich on this show. First time for everything. What do I do with this? I put it in plastic. Man, these Jason Kidd cards don't need to be in this plastic protector.
What is appropriate chain of custody right now for something like this? Like, what do we do to make sure it doesn't lose value for, like, exposure to air or something like that?
Well, I
right now you could put in. Besides the one big plastic bag, do you have another separate one? Try to find something.
Why would I have another separate plastic bag in my bag?
You don't carry.
I don't know.
You don't have a laminator in your backpack.
But yeah, hard.
That sounds like her
protection.
Wrestling nickname, the Laminator.
It's actually something people get done to their eyebrows now. Okay, I'll take a
wait,
picture.
Wait, what?
Yeah, not like with plastic. I don't know. They just fill them in. I was Persian woman. I had no eyebrow issues growing up, or mustache for that matter. I think my facial hair was better than Danny Parkins at one point. But he knows it. We've talked about it. So what do I do, guys, with this here card?
You got it. 1988 card number 799. Estimated value $335.
This is all because of Chris Kamka, the patron saint of baseball history in Chicago.
A winner.
You should cut him in. Yeah.
The reality is, you'll go to a card shop and say you have this, and they'll say, cool, we have 712 of these in the back room.
No, you know what's going to happen? They're going to be like, what do you know, woman? And I'll be like, you're right. I don't know anything, except I know this card is worth $35.
Grow out the facial hair and you'll convince them.
Huge. Just
grow the stash. Hello.
Can you tell me how much this card is worth?
I can't grow the stash anymore, okay? I'm older. I don't have as much facial hair. We got it in.
I had to.
It was about time. Twitch says I should buy pizza on Pizza Friday. That brings us to I keep touching this card. Okay, I'm going to set it aside. Wow, this is like the coolest pack of cards ever. Okay, do we even care what's next? Mark Thurman with the Tigers.
Mark Thurman?
Yep.
Nothing on old Mark. I don't.
Who the hell is he?
Mark Thurman had a 12-5 record with 128 strikeouts and was tied for the Texas League lead with 27 games started in 1981. You started.
Am I spelling it right? T H U R M A N.
M O N D.
Oh, Thurmond, like Nate Thurmond. Okay. Because right, he didn't come up, and well, there he is. There he's a guy who played.
Man, I got Bo and Tom Glavine out of this.
8 years.
Vaughn Hayes with the Phillies.
Vaughn Hayes. Yeah, he's pretty good. Outfielder.
He had 107 runs scored in 1986.
Well, that means he had a high on base percentage and his teammates were good.
Mm-hmm. Batted for .305 average, .480 slugging. Oh, slugging's on here. What do you know? Walked 74 times. Walked 121 times.
He was good. Vaughn Hayes, career OPS plus of 113.
And he's from the Philadelphia area, Newtown Square.
Yeah, he had a high on base guy, .354 career on base.
I'm sure the Phillies fans loved him for all of this. So concludes our...
That's it. We end on Vaughn Hayes.
But I found this card in my collection. It is a cool jigsaw puzzle of guess who, Dan? Yaz.
Yaz. Look at this. You get a Yaz jigsaw puzzle?
How appropriate is this? Apparently, these are three pieces of 63. And you had to collect all 63 to complete the puzzle.
You're going
to
be doing the Hawk Walk next. I mean, this is, you have the whole thing going. I think you know you're going to be leaving here with go play golf somewhere for free.
Or maybe it's a sign that you shouldn't diss on a Triple Crown.
Apparently, by the way, I just got a note from one of the writers at Fangraphs. They want to write an article about the exchange with Ian Happ. How cool is that?
Seaman, see.
Isn't that fun? Okay, speaking of fun, a random question from my kid turned into a home discussion that turned into this. We started talking about NBA players playing one-on-one against each other and whether or not you could do like what the CBA used to do for the All-Star weekend. You have your three-point competition, you have your slam dunk competition, and then you have a one-on-one competition. Who would win and why? So we got a bracket. We haven't seeded it completely, but we have 4-1 seeds, 4-2 seeds, 4-3 seeds, and 4-4 seeds all time in the history of the NBA for a one-on-one tournament. Shooting, handles, quickness, length, defense, and then competitiveness slash creativity. That's our sort of immeasurable criterion we put in there. Competitiveness, creativity, quickness, length, shooting, handles, defense, all time. Think about names. Think about how the actual game of one-on-one works and what skill sets are going to be in, what are going to be out. But these are the, try to figure out the names that we have here.
I know, this is some strict criteria.
I know we left some people out. I know the names of people we probably left out. I know with some of the, you can get mad at me if you want, but this was just my son and me working on this, looking at some numbers and thinking some of this through. But these, we've got 16 names here.
I like it. I mean, I'm still just happy about the Will Perdue card and the...
No, be happy about the Tom Glavine card.
All of it.
Pay a rent for a month. There you go.
Rent for a month?
Sorry, I don't know.
Where?
Not here, maybe.
What year?
In 1988, appropriately.
Perhaps.
Enough. That's about what I paid in Rockford in 94.
Yeah, when I was starting out in Longview, Texas, I had to move apartments on my $18,000 salary because they wanted to raise my rent to $500 and I couldn't afford it, so I had to go find another $400 apartment. And that was like not that long ago, respectively speaking.
Rent is too damn high. So we'll do this little basketball thing next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!